Good morning.
I want to thank you all for coming today. I particularly want to thank you if you've experienced infertility yourself. If that's you, you may be here with some trepidation. You're not really sure what to expect from this morning, and I want to thank you for your bravery of being part of today. You might be unsure about what your life looks like, and it's certainly not turning out how you expected. I want to acknowledge straight up that your grief is real. For some, this experience has caused you to question God because it all just seems so unfair. Maybe you've gone through IVF or other types of treatment, or maybe you're considering that now. For others, it may be a bit of a secret grief that you haven't really shared before, or maybe you have shared it, but the results have been underwhelming. Friends of mine told me the story of she told one of her girlfriends, a Christian friend, that they were experiencing some infertility, and later on the friend called her back up and said, "Now, you're thinking about the infertility thing. Do you have any Freemasons in your family? Because there might be a curse." My friend was horrified. Clearly, this is not a useful thing to say. We can do better, right? I think we can do better than that kind of response. Some here may not be married and you wish you were. And you might have a medical reason to expect that infertility would be likely were you to get married and try and have children. You too long for children, and you might feel particularly isolated as you navigate complex medical decisions without a spouse alongside you. Some of you may be facing secondary infertility, that is, you have a child or two, but another one seems, when possible. And it can feel like your experience is even more invisible. And for others, you may be here just because you want to support people and you want to learn how you can support others. Now, we're covering some pretty emotional and heavy stuff. I don't know how you're feeling right now. Maybe you're okay, or maybe you're a bit anxious, maybe a bit sad. Maybe you're okay, but you're feeling for someone else, either in the room or back at home in your context. Perhaps this is bringing up memories of past pain. Whatever the situation, I want you to know that it's okay to feel whatever you're feeling now and during the day. If you need to step out, that's totally fine. No one will notice. Requip wants this to be of benefit to you personally and to those around you. And for your convenience, the tissue boxes are located here and here. So my aim this morning is to help all of us have better conversations with people about infertility and to be more able to cope with this grief if it comes our way. So 1 in 6 Australian couples experience infertility. That means lots of couples around us, doesn't it? Lots of couples in our communities, in our churches, in our workplaces. Sometimes it's a bit of a hidden thing, but this morning we're going to take the lid off and have a good chat about it. It can be difficult to know who's going through it because these days with the pill and other kinds of contraception, most people don't have kids straight after they get married. And some people will tell people they can't, they've chosen not to have kids, even though the truth might be that they can't. Okay, so what exactly are we talking about? Technically, and I've got this on your sheet, infertility is the inability of a couple to achieve conception after a year of intercourse without contraception, or the inability to carry pregnancies to a live birth. So, in normal language, you've been having regular sex for a year and you haven't fallen pregnant. Or you've had miscarriages and the babies you carried have not been born live. And what are the causes of infertility? Well, they vary hugely. I'm not a medical doctor and I'm not going to pretend to be one. The causes are found equally in men's bodies and female bodies, and some infertility is unexplained. There's lots we could have talked about this morning. I won't be outlining the many medical reasons for infertility, and I would encourage you to go and see a doctor if you need to investigate something in your own circumstance. Whether each of us will experience infertility ourselves or not, though, we all will know people who do. So my question is, do you know how to care for them? I would love churches in the Canberra region to be really good at talking about this kind of stuff, wouldn't you? Wouldn't that be beautiful? If you aren't experiencing infertility, I want you to listen up, because we all need to be good at talking about this. So we're going to approach this in a really practical way. I'm going to Think about how we can have beneficial conversations with people experiencing infertility, and then I'll share some wisdom, particularly for those facing infertility themselves. And then Andrew will help us think about how to wisely navigate the various treatment options in the world of assistive reproductive technologies. Okay, so let's have a bit of a think about that initial conversation you might have with someone about infertility. Let's say your friends, you just change them and they say they're not feeling great. You ask, how are you going with it? I'm not feeling great. Just got a call from the doctor, just got some test results back, and the results aren't good. Looks like we might not be able to have kids. So before we jump in to that conversation and think about what you say or do, let's pause, step back, and have a bit of a think about what they might have experienced in the lead up to this day, just before this conversation. I want to help you imagine what they might have experienced. I'm going to paint a bit of a picture here. It's a made-up story, but it's a common kind of story. Well, they've been married for a few years, and they were on the pill. A few years ago, they went to their GP, got checked out, did what they needed to do with them, came off the pill, read up on charting her cycle, bought a thermometer. Coming off the pill gave her a sense of control, and the initial few months were exciting, trying all the time. She thought she'd be a mum soon. He noticed the way a friend's toddler looked up at his dad with awe and looked forward to his own child doing the same for him. One Saturday, she was at the markets and she saw a beautiful baby quilt and she bought it and took it home. They made sure they could figure out when she was most fertile around ovulation. They did the maths and they thought they might have a baby by the time of that big family birthday party for his grandma. But nothing was really happening. And gradually they felt more anxious about it. Sex became a chore. Her period mocked her. They started to feel like their prayers for a baby were falling on deaf ears. They found out a younger couple were expecting a baby and they found themselves feeling resentful. They went to that big family birthday party and they fobbed off questions from well-meaning aunties about when they'd start a family. After a while, they decided to go back to their GP. The GP recommended a series of tests, and for a few more months, they spent time and money doing those tests. He had to deliver a sperm sample, which was weird. They had to find a particular place for a blood test, a particular time of day. She spent $300 on an ultrasound. They were getting pretty stressed. One month, they didn't even bother trying, and they didn't have sex for a few weeks. She started to feel uncertain about her future. How long would this go on? He started to feel like he had less confidence at work. He couldn't really think straight. Then today, they get a call from the GP and the test results aren't good. So all your friend has said to you is, not feeling great actually, just got a call from the GP. He said we may not be able to have kids. We had a few tests done and the results are pretty bad. What are you going to say? What are you hoping to achieve in this conversation? Well, I think some good goals just right now are to help them feel heard and loved and give them the opportunity to share as much as they want to. How do you do that? Well, what I'm going to say is true for lots of conversations, but let's think about it particularly in this context. Firstly, while you're talking, make sure you can give them your attention. Be present. If you're rushing off to something else, maybe miss that next thing and be there in the moment with them. Whatever they've shared might have made you feel uncomfortable, particularly if you do have children, for whatever reason. Conversations like this can make some people who already have kids feel guilty. If that's how you're feeling, notice it. But don't allow it to result in you either minimising their experience or offering assurances because you feel uncomfortable. They're being vulnerable and you need to show them you're not about to zoom off or brush off what they're saying or offer them some kind of empty reassurance. Secondly, let them know that you've heard what they said. Listen out for what they've said and about their feelings and reflect that back to them. You know, it can just be really simple. You can say something like, "Oh, it sounds like a really hard day. That's really sad news." It kind of sounds a bit awkward saying it right now, but this kind of really simple response, well, you guess that they've had a hard day, which is a pretty fair guess. You guess that they're feeling sad, and they can choose to agree, "Yes, I'm feeling sad," or disagree. They can choose to talk more to you about that if they want, or stop the conversation. It's up to them. You could let them know that you'd like to talk about it more later on down the track if they want to. You could invite them over for a coffee later on. So what aren't your goals in this conversation? I want you to avoid asking medical questions. You really don't need to know what it is the doctors were testing for, what the doctor thinks they might do next, why this, you know, offering your own ideas about if they could quit gluten, or, you know, these things get said. I'm seeing some nods. You don't actually need to know what they were testing for in order to care for them in this moment. They may wish to tell you. They may want to dump all of that on you, and that's fine, but you don't need to ask about it. Also, the medical problem might lie with their spouse, and they're likely to be pretty protective of them and not want to share that with you. So remember the picture I painted just before. They're feeling sad, but that might be just the tip of the iceberg of everything that's come, potentially from the last couple of years. Of course, this kind of thing is true for other chronic health problems and conversations around that too, isn't it? Unless you're a doctor, you don't really need to be asking the kind of medical questions that a doctor needs to know about in order to care for someone. Now, in this room, there are going to be some fixes. Praise God for you. You know, if someone presents you a problem, you want to find the solution and you get in there and fix it. And sometimes that's great. But if that is you, this is a time when you need to just steady on a bit. You particularly need to hear this. Don't jump in and offer solutions. When you're listening to someone talk about something difficult like this, it's generally not a good idea to talk heaps about yourself, hey? Down the track, you might offer a bit of your story or a friend's story in an effort to encourage your friend, but we need to be pretty restrained about this. One of my friends told me she confided in a friend that she and her husband had been trying for a baby for a long time. Straight away, her friend said, "I know how you feel. My husband and I tried 5 months to fall pregnant with our first." Remember, that's not infertility. And while those 5 months might have been particularly hard for that couple, saying something like that, well, it's not really listening, is it? It's not really helping that person feel understood and encouraging them to open up more if they'd like to. Instead, if that kind of thing is your experience, perhaps after a couple of conversations, you could say something instead like, "Sounds like this is all really hard. I remember when we were trying, it took us 5 months to fall pregnant, and that was hard enough. Sounds like this is a really long journey for you guys." You hear the difference? Saying something like that, well, it shows that you've heard them, but you're not also minimising their experience. Are you not just talking about yourself? So as we're having this kind of conversation, how do we bring God into the picture? Well, you might have experienced this. It can be common for Christians to quickly take quite a simplistic, "don't worry, trust God" approach. Quite soon after Steve and I told one family that we were experiencing infertility, they said, like straight away, "Don't worry, so-and-so is going to have kids, now they have four, don't worry, trust God." End of conversation. This kind of comment, well, you know, it's kind of well-meaning, but I want to strongly encourage you to avoid it. The causes of infertility are so vast and can be so complex that comparing couples is pretty silly. But far worse than just displaying a bit of naivete, saying, "Don't worry, so-and-so's have four kids, just trust God," well, it's not really listening, is it? Facing these kind of things and other kind of complex health issues can make us wonder if God is real, if he's good, if he's powerful. The last thing someone facing something like this needs is the subtle accusation that they're not trusting God. And then maybe if they did, this wouldn't be happening. My brothers and sisters, we don't need to do that kind of thing, do we? It's not true, and it's not of benefit to others. It is a good and godly thing to try and encourage someone to trust in our sovereign God who loves us and who is powerful. But we need to be aware of the words we say, when we say them, and how we speak. There's a vast difference between praying in front of someone or saying to them straight into their face that they would trust God or that they would keep trusting God. You hear the difference? It's only one word. But encouraging them to keep trusting God doesn't assume that you think they're not already. And it's the difference between telling or encouraging. Okay, so what are some other ways that we can encourage others to keep trusting God? In time, it can be great to sit down and read the Psalms with someone. You might remember the Requip Day we had at Mental Health last year where we talked a lot about the Psalms. And at Women's Convention last year as well, we talked a lot about the Psalms. They can be so powerful, especially in our Australian happy-go-lucky culture. It could be really powerful to sit down and read one of the Lament Psalms and be real about the feelings that you identify with that the psalmist has talked about. There's a few suggestions of Psalms you might read with someone on the handout. You might read it slowly, talk through the feelings you see. Your friend might identify with the emotional journey of the psalmist as he cries out to God and notices God's goodness. Another great thing to do is pray, but don't just say, "I'll pray for you." Sometimes, I don't know if you notice this, sometimes Christians end a conversation like that. "I'll pray for you." It's, you know, and the conversation stops at that point. No, you don't need to do that. If it's an appropriate time to pray, listen to them, ask them how you can pray for them, and then actually do. Pray for them. Okay, so what about offering a biblical example of infertility? There are examples from the Bible about childless couples and their grief and their experience. It's a common experience, a common thing to talk about Abraham and Sarah. Isn't it? They trusted God in really impossible circumstances, right? God gave them a baby when he believed their promise to them. Does that mean that if we trust God, we'll have a baby? This is a real question, isn't it? If you want, you can read more about Abraham and Sarah in Genesis 17 and 21 in the Old Testament. And in the New Testament, Paul comments on it in Romans chapter 4. Here he says, of Abraham, he says, in hope he believed against hope. He didn't weaken in faith when he considered his and Sarah's old age. His faith was counted to him as righteousness. So what do we do with this? Abraham and Sarah were in a particular time in salvation history, and it wasn't because they trusted him that God gave them their baby. It was because they were part of God's enormous plan to bring about his people Israel, his generous plan, and we are not Abraham and Sarah. While it's good to want to have kids, while God certainly wants married couples to try and have children, we're not directly promised that we will. Yes, God gave two elderly people a son, but that was part of his grand plan of salvation that led to Jesus. We're not promised a baby like Abraham and Sarah were. We can identify with Abraham and Sarah's grief and the other childless couples in the Bible. At the very start of the story of God and his world, people rejected God, and the consequences of that messed up everything, absolutely everything. Pain in bringing forth children, I don't think that just refers to the physical act of labour, including being able to have children. It's messed up everything, and it brought about difficulties that are now inherent in raising children. There are stories of other childless families in the Bible. We can certainly know that we're not the first to feel this kind of sadness, which is powerful when we feel like we're just isolated and alone in our grief. We're not the first people to feel this kind of sadness. And when we think about Abraham and Sarah, going back to them, we can marvel at God's goodness and his power and his generosity in giving them this baby. But remember, Abraham and Sarah were at a particular time in God's salvation history. Their baby was the start of God fulfilling his plan to bring about a people for himself, which, if you follow it all the way through the Bible, leads to Jesus. This is important for us to hear. God didn't give Abraham and Sarah because they were somehow more special than other people, or because they have some kind of more magical faith that you might not have. That's not what it's about. Some people might tell you that that's what it's about, but it's not what it's about. Abraham, Sarah, and their baby played a particular part in God's story, which leads to Jesus and what Jesus has done for all people, including all of us here. Jesus' sacrifice and vindication, his death and resurrection, these have meant that now salvation is available to all, not just God's people. Israel can be part of God's family anymore. Because of Jesus, now anyone can. Even we can know God now. We read in Romans 4 that their faith, their trust, was counted to them as righteousness. Our trust is counted to us as righteousness as we believe in him who raised our Lord Jesus from the dead. That's the kind of faith and trust God wants us to have. Trust that Jesus rose from the dead. Okay, we've thought a bit about how to navigate those first couple of conversations, some things to avoid, some things to say, things to be mindful of. Over the long term, how can you support people experiencing infertility? I'm going to give 6 quick ideas. This is going to vary a lot for different people, for men and women, for single people, for couples. You need to just get to know people in your context well enough to figure out what's going to help them. Here are 6 quick ideas. Firstly, if you have a friend facing infertility and you fall pregnant, it can be a good idea, if they're a close friend, to actually think about sharing the news with them either in person or in a personal email or in a personal phone call before the news just goes public and they find out, you know, just the same as everyone else. We've heard that this has been beneficial for other people and it has for us. In the past, one couple some years ago, they came over to our house and they told us they were expecting, and they did it in a really kind and generous way, and it made it easier for us to be joyful about their pregnancy because of their intentionality and care towards us. Secondly, if you are able to fall pregnant and you have a baby shower, particularly talking to the girls now, it can be kind to give your friend who's struggling the option to come or not as she chooses. Don't exclude her thinking she might not want to be there because it'll be too hard, but don't just assume she has to be there. Don't make her run it. She's got more time. One of my friends told me she received a baby shower invitation in the mail along with a little handwritten note explaining, love you to be there, totally understand if you can't come. Isn't that lovely? Simple little thing. My friend felt so loved and like she was genuinely able to make the decision herself. Thirdly, if you have little kids and you're planning your child's birthday party, just think about perhaps not only including other people who have children as well. Maybe your single friends or your married friends without kids want to celebrate with your family too, especially if they're really close friends. Fourthly, about Facebook. Now, Dave, I reckon we should have a whole recruit day on social media, but I'm just going to say a couple of things now about wise and unwise ways to use social media. Firstly, if you're a parent, just be careful, right, about how you post about your kids, how often you post about kids, what kind of photos you put on Facebook and other social media. Do you really need to try and join the ranks of those competing for the cutest pregnancy announcement photo? Really? Do you need to post a photo about every single thing your child has done? Just remember how public social media is. It's a public platform, you know, for the sake of your friends, but also for the sake of your kids. I think it's kind of sad that many people find themselves scrolling through Facebook or other social media. You might do this when you're feeling lonely, sad, tired, bored, hungry. There's evidence to suggest that we're leaving finishing a session on Facebook feeling even worse. We don't need to add to that, do we, by a barrage stream of cute photos of our children. Let's do our best to not contribute to that kind of thing, hey? Fifthly, Be careful about your expectations of your own life and others. And particularly, I want you to be really careful about asking the question, when are you going to have kids? Especially, you know, in a really public place, you know, morning tea after church, where are you going to have kids? In your own life, it's probably not a good idea to say things like, when I have kids, and assume that you'll get married one day and then you'll be able to have kids whenever you want. If you do get married, hold things like contraception, figuratively, in an open hand. You're actually a lot less in control than things like contraception can make you feel. The reality is, none of us ever get to choose to have children. Even if we use language to say, oh, we went from trying and not trying and we chose to have a child and look how well we timed it. No, the reality is, children are always a gift from God to be received humbly. Okay, listen up. I want you to delete the phrase, starting a family, as the euphemism you use for having children, because it's just not a Christian approach to what a family is it? You watch. When next you go to a wedding and the minister's up the front and he says some promises and the couple say some promises and they publicly declare their promises, that's when a new family is forged, right there in front of everyone, not 3 years or so later when they have their first baby. We don't need to say things like starting a family as the euphemism we use for starting to have children. Sixthly, if you do know someone, a couple or a single person who is experiencing infertility, don't be silent about it over the long term. If you're close to them, you might occasionally mention something to remind them that you haven't forgotten. You don't need to force a conversation, you don't need to be going on about it all the time. But a kind-hearted sentence mentioning that you're praying for them or just about some kind of context that is happening in the moment, it can mean a lot to them who feel left behind or who might feel like their grief is invalid or not noticed. And if a couple does choose to do some kind of fertility treatment and you're close enough to know them, figure out how you can actually support them through that. So if they do an IVF cycle and they have an embryo transfer and it's not successful, that is the embryo died, grieve with them, with the husband and the wife. Grieve with them. If they're doing an IVF cycle, for example, and you're close enough to know that it's actually happening, why not take them a meal, offer to clean their bathroom. If they have other children, offer to babysit them so she can get off to her 7 a.m. blood test or something. For a couple doing IVF and other treatment options, their husband can feel totally out of the picture. He doesn't have much to do. The whole thing has been taken out of his bedroom and has become completely medical. So guys here, if you have a friend going through this, figure out ways that you can support him. And sometimes medical technology helps a family out in their desire to have children, and sometimes it doesn't. So grieve the loss of life if they've done an embryo transfer and it's not successful. And we're going to be thinking a bit more about that kind of thing this afternoon. Point them to our loving Heavenly Father who knows them and who knows who are his. Okay, I want to make two quick comments just for the sake of pastors and church leaders who are here, because this is an equip event and we have some those kind of people here. There are 2 days of the year that can be excruciating for people experiencing infertility or pregnancy loss for that matter, Mother's Day and Father's Day. Many of you would know that. Many of you would be already really careful and intentional about the way that your church celebrates Mother's Day or Father's Day. But if it's not something you've really thought about, can I encourage you to do so? I've been in churches where the service leader asked all the mums to stand and everyone gave them a round of applause. You can kind of see, you know, it's nice to honour mums or dads, like there's something good about that. But can you also see that that's not necessarily really what church is about? Church is about a whole variety of people coming together, single people, married people, older people, younger people, teenagers, everyone. We want to be really careful and intentional. I'm not going to lay out rules about what's good or not good to do. I just want you to think about it in your context. And if you're not the one leading the service that day, I want you to work with the person who is to help them be careful and intentional. Let's work hard to make sure church feels like home, no matter if you're married, single, don't have kids, have kids, 80 or 18 or 8 months old, anyone. Okay, the second comment for pastors is about the language used to describe a Sunday service. It's a pretty recent thing, but it's been going on for a couple of decades in Australia now. Many churches describe the service where kids are welcome and where there's a kids program as the family service. We're so used to this now, sometimes it's hard to notice because it's just part of our culture, right? When some people might mean church family when they say family service, in the really healthy sense, you know, where there's a mixture of older people, younger people, kids, anyone, all mixed in together. Generally, that's not what most people mean when they say family service, and it's certainly not what most people hear. So if you want to describe a service where kids are welcome or there's a kids program, why not just say that? Even the inclusive sounding phrase, family service, can actually exclude people. And worse than that, it can unwittingly white-ant our ecclesiology. Now, I want to speak directly to our brothers and sisters who are facing infertility. During this journey, your own emotional resilience needs to be nurtured and protected. You and your husband or wife will figure out things that will support you. You will get to know yourself better. You'll get to know one another better. This is not being selfish. This is being wise. If you are single and facing infertility, can I encourage you to be vulnerable with a couple of close friends, with a Bible study group leader? Try and plan with those close friends for mutual encouragement and support. Women, when that baby shower comes in the mail, you might want to go, you might not want to go, and it's okay and it's up to you. If you're married, talk about it with your husband. Plan to support one another. If you're single, share with a close friend and be real about how you might be feeling at that particular point. So a few years ago, I went to the baby shower of my sister-in-law. Even though at that time I wasn't in a very good place about infertility stuff, I knew it would be difficult for me to go just at that moment, but I decided to because I thought it would be valuable for my relationship with her and my brother over the long term. And in hindsight, I'm glad I did go. But there's been plenty of other things that I've just not gone. And I'm glad of that too. You may not be able to avoid something, and sometimes you just kind of have to go to stuff, right? But you can kind of try and grow in self-awareness enough to predict what might take the wind out of your sails and plan to build up your emotional tank afterwards. Several years ago, I was at a baby shower of a friend who, she and I have been trying to have children for 9 years. And she shared at her baby shower that for them, Christmas was always the hardest time. Another Christmas and no baby. Another Christmas and no baby. Another Christmas. It's a really common thing to feel acute grief around events like Christmas, birthdays, wedding anniversary, friends or close family members having babies. This will be different for different people, right? And it's different for men and women. Talk about your experience with your spouse or with your close friend and do what you can to grow in self-awareness. Notice these things. Perhaps even write it down so it doesn't surprise you in the future. Pray about it. Plan for ways to wisely navigate those times as best as you can. Figure out your support network. This could be your extended family or it might not be. It's up to you. Now, your personal journey through this, it really doesn't have to be all public property. You can decide how much you'll share with various friends and family members and people in your church. And it can be great to find a couple of godly friends who will really do the journey with you, who will pray with you, who will ask you about how you're going, who will be real with you. If there are also people who can't have kids, though, be aware that if they do have children, then you might feel even more left behind. and isolated when even they have a baby, but keep working at the relationship and just recognise that the relationship will change. So right now you might be feeling pretty unsure about the future. You're not sure about how your life is going to end up, and it's certainly not what you expected. It can be hard not knowing how long all this is going for. It's kind of like running an ultra marathon, except you don't know what the course is and you don't know where the finish line is. It's just an ultra marathon. Now, I don't want to be completely negative, but I've got to say, even if you do have children, the kind of grief around infertility, particularly if it's gone on for some time, it's not erased by having a child. It's not covered up. It remains part of your story. If God gives children in some way and at some time, and I pray He does, it's wonderful and it's worth celebrating, and it will not take away the years of sadness. It's likely that your sense of identity will be rattled. It's only through turning to the truth of who you are in Christ, if you're a Christian, that you can really navigate that. And be aware that your love towards God and your joy at Jesus' death and resurrection through all of this might become muted, feel distant. That can be disorientating for sure. Can I encourage you, in the midst of uncertainty and grief, please keep talking with your husband or wife, keep seeking safe friendships to give and receive care, keep turning to God's word, keep trusting God. More generally, I want to mention a little bit about our society and our general culture's attitude towards stuff to do with infertility. So our media has done a really great job, haven't they, of trying to raise awareness of the need to try and have children, particularly when a woman is in her 20s or early 30s. But the downside of this is that many people now have a view that if a couple can't have kids, it's the woman's fault. Many people now have the view, because this is the environment around us, that it's because of selfish choices the woman has made. She wanted the career, not the kids. It's her fault. In this kind of context, it can be easy to assume that couples who do things like IVF or other treatment options are just wealthy, selfish, older people who should have done things differently. The woman wanted it all and now she thinks she can just pay for a baby too. Now, I feel uncomfortable talking like this, but I wanted to say it out loud because I know that some people, even in our Christian communities, think like this, perhaps even without realising it. Now, as Christians, there's no room for such smug and judgmental thoughts, is there? And even if a couple has made poor choices, even if there's been something that has in some way led to infertility, we need to offer grace to them. As I mentioned, the problem in infertility can be equally found in a woman's body, in a man's body, and a lot of infertility is unexplained or a combination, and a superior mentality that just thinks, well, it's her fault, it's because of her choices. Well, it's not just silly, it's also ungodly. And when does God ever relate to us like that? He's not smug. He's gracious. To our dear brothers and sisters facing infertility, thank you for your bravery in being part of today. God cares for you. He knows your story. He knows your pain. And I pray that today will in some small way be a blessing for you along your journey. If you like, I'm able to speak privately with you about these things. I'm going to close just by reading Psalm 13, because I think it's just a beautiful short psalm. To give us a moment now to turn our hearts towards God in light of what we've been thinking about, and before we break for morning tea and then get on with the rest of the day. So Psalm 13. How long, Lord? Will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord my God, give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death and my enemy will say I have overcome him and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me.